I know when I grew up, I was one of two Asians in my whole school, and I never really thought about it. But looking back at it, there's a lot of jokes, a lot of Asian jokes, a lot of gay jokes thrown at me all the time. I hated high school. It was like my least favorite period of my life. I do not wish to return ever. But, you know, in a way, the world's a little bit like a larger version of high school. So that's why it's important for us as adults to really work towards just normalizing everybody.
I'm Ethan Devitt, and welcome to this 50 Faces Focus series, in which we are celebrating LGBTQ+ professionals in a special series for Pride Month 2023. I'm joined today by Ronnie Wu, who's the chef and owner of The Delicious Cook, an LA-based private chef company that specializes in four-star dining experiences. He's an accomplished chef, television personality, and cookbook author, celebrated by his fans and peers alike for his infectious personality, background in dating and relationships, and creative Asian American cuisine, which combines Asian dishes with all American influences. Welcome, Ronnie. Thanks for joining me today.
Hey, Ethan. Thanks for having me.
Let's start by talking about your background. Where did you grow up and what were your early interests?
So it's funny. I grew up in Seattle, Washington, the Pacific Northwest, generally rainy and cloudy, and then 3 months of the year, super sunny. My interest, I would say, it's funny. The most vivid aspiration I had was when I was 15 to become a fashion model. But before then, I think I had a lot of big dreams. I can't really remember them because I don't know. I think I had so many of them. I didn't really know exactly what I wanted to do, but I did know I wanted to sort of step outside of my little town or my little like circle or community and sort of do something a little bit bigger. So when I was 15, I knew I wanted to be a model. I actually signed with a local agency. And then when I turned 18, I went to 1 year of undergrad at University of Washington. And then after 1 year, I was like, I don't think I can sort of keep doing this. So I actually dropped out of college for only a year, but I dropped out of college, moved to LA and pursued my modeling career. And I signed with Wilhelmina Models. And then that was what I thought I wanted to do when I was younger. Obviously things have changed, but that was my very first sort of big picture dream, I think.
When did food and a passion for food come into the equation?
I think the passion for food has always been there because when I look back at it, my family was very food focused, food oriented, and all the travel was always planned around foodie destinations. And I always remember just, we were always snacking. We're always eating. My mom was really big on making sure we had dinner together 5 or 6 times a week. She would make these elaborate dinners like every single time we had dinner together. So I think we were really food centric. I just didn't know it because I grew up in an Asian family. So it was very much like be a doctor, be a lawyer. So I didn't consider it a possibility as a career. So obviously I explored all these different things like after modeling. I graduated my undergrad degree at UCLA, and then I ended up going on and getting 2 master's degrees, an MBA, and then a master's in marriage family therapy. You know, I was in the middle of, not in the middle, but I was in the beginning stages of getting my licensed therapist hours. And ultimately, I think at some point I was just like, I don't think this is the right fit for me. I totally believe in therapy, but I think my personality is just not the right fit for a therapeutic setting. So I kind of had a moment, like an epiphany, where I was like, what would I do if I really wanted to do something? What would I do at this moment? What would make me the happiest? Because I do believe people's passions and dreams change throughout their lives. And so I have always just been very much someone who kind of marches to the beat of their own drum. And also, if I want to do something, I'll start that same day. Like, I don't put it off. And so food was one of those things where I was just like, I think I want to try my hand at food. And so I just started making YouTube videos. I was actually a very original YouTuber before YouTube became YouTube. And it was just my way of practicing being on camera. Obviously, I moved into television and other types of media. And now it's sort of online content's huge. But my dream and my passions have always been in television, and like big cameras and sets and things like that. So, but yeah, I started my private chef company, The Delicious Cook, shortly after I decided to become a chef. And everything sort of came from there.
And when did you discover you had that flair for media? Because I think that's been part of your image, is that this, you know, this great engaging personality. Did you have it from day one? Do you develop it like a muscle, like one has to develop other skills?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think that some people are just like really good on camera, but I do think it is a really strange thing to be on camera. Just I think like people have to develop any sort of talent. I know personally for me, it's different for everybody. I don't think I'm like, you know, I still look at myself on camera and I cringe all the time. I'm just like, oh, that was like a horrible appearance. Or I'll look at myself and be like, oh, that was a great appearance. It's just like any sort of thing that we do, any career we look at, we'll be like, oh, that memo wasn't so great, or that project I just finished wasn't so great. But I definitely think that it is like a muscle. You have to practice it. You have to get comfortable with it. You know, even now after like 10 years in it, I still get jitters on certain television shows, or I get nervous before certain meetings or things like that. So, but it's definitely something that I look back at old footage of myself and I'm like, I'm definitely much, much more comfortable, because it's a very strange thing to be in front of cameras, and you learn the ins and outs and the different behind the scenes sort of tricks and things like that. And so you start to pick up on those, and you get a little bit more comfortable. You know what works for you and what doesn't work for you. You know your weaknesses. Like, I watch myself on tape mainly to sort of learn what I don't like about what I did that last time and try to change it the next time to be a little bit better. But again, I'm like so far from perfection, but also like, what does that even mean? What is perfection? I think I look at it from a standpoint of like just being more comfortable with being on camera. And so whatever my personality is on camera, that's what they get.
And do you have someone that gives you feedback? Because I often have this issue myself. I go on camera, not as much as you do, but it's very hard to get feedback from people to say, okay, well, I didn't think this really landed, or you could have done this a little different. People sort of are cautious about that. Have you got anyone to do that for you?
I do. People around me and like my team tends to be really positive and really constructive, but generally like really positive. Lots of times I ask afterwards, because they're like, and I think the mindset is like, well, you can't change it anyway. So it's like, oh, no, it was great. But one person who's very honest with me is my husband, and he will tell me legit, like, if that was like a good appearance or not one, or if you could have done something better, or just anything that he notices that could be improved, he'll tell me. And not because it's unsolicited, like I ask him for it specifically. And he's very supportive. He always puts a positive spin on things. And when I ask for things I can improve on, it always comes from a place of construction and constructive criticism. It's never like to put me down. So I know he means well. So that's the person who's very honest with me, but that's also because I wouldn't want it any other way. I don't want like a yes person in my life, because I think that's not helpful or productive to have yes people all around you, because then you just start to lose sense of reality and you just never grow.
Exactly. And I think that growth, that need to continuously adapt and improve, is actually really important. We can't always have the same shtick, because it starts to get stale. So there is a need to come up with both new material and I think new, just to adapt one's personality. You've had such an interesting career through different areas. Just because this is our Pride series and you're one of the last guests, it's fantastic to have you. Love to hear your thoughts on inclusion, particularly around LGBTQ+ individuals, but maybe more generally too, across the industries you've worked in. And how has that changed over the course of your career?
Well, I think obviously in the television space, I think people from the LGBTQIA+ community have always been in the food space. I just think maybe a little bit more recently, they've been able to be a little bit more in the public eye in their representation. I think there's still a long ways to go. Obviously, certain networks that are specific around food, like their audience tends to be like middle America. And I think as someone in that community, it's like very much like, we want to see representation. We want to see people like us. And there's so many different members in our community that I want them all to be represented. But it's tough, because a lot of times these platforms or any sort of business, it's all about the bottom line. And they think about who the audience is, or who the buyers are, or who the viewers are. And it's kind of unfortunate, because I think lots of times we surround ourselves with people in our community and people who love us and allies. And we kind of forget that a lot of the world is still kind of stuck in the Middle Ages, because, you know, I live in LA, so it's like we're on coastal cities, like the coastal states tend to have a little bit more liberal views and just kind of like to each their own. And that's how I think everyone should think. The world would be such a better place if everyone was represented and everyone's just kind of like let everybody live their own lives. So I think as far as representation goes in media, because I think that's the biggest thing, and that's kind of one of the most important things, because media is what everyone sees, but also in companies, I have friends who are not in media and who are not in the business. And I think representation is also something that they struggle to. I think that's why there's diversity mandates and things like that. But I think it's definitely come a long way. That's for sure. Because I think there's more talent like us in the LGBTQ community that are coming forward, and people are realizing that we are bankable. We can help the bottom line. And so it's nice, but we have a long ways to go. That's for sure. I think the opportunities for us are growing, but they're still small, given how many spaces there are.
Just getting back to that role model, I mean, that's really interesting, because obviously role models and representation is important everywhere. But looking at media, I mean, you have the ultimate amplification platform. And I'm looking at someone like Ellen, for example. who's become a mainstream star and is gay. And you know, that I think normalizes perhaps for people that people can be gay and other things. And we don't have to really focus on that aspect of their identity. But would Absolutely. You say that's improving the level of role models too?
I do. I think that's a really, yeah, the level of role models are improving. I mean, obviously, also like in a lot of shows, there's always a gay character now of some sort. And I think that's really important. I think it's not part of an agenda, as some people like to say. It's really just actual representation of how people are. Like most everyone has gay people in their life. And if they think they didn't, a lot of people are like, oh, the gays are coming out now. And it's like, well, gays have always existed. The LGBTQ community has always been around. It's just that either you're too ignorant to see it or people are just scared to come out because of people who are ignorant, but then they're going to shut them out. So I think now it, like the representation is so important because it creates a safe space for people to be like, you know what? I am a normal part of society. So I think that to have role models who are a part of the LGBTQ community is really important because I think it just normalizes people and it normalizes your life. And it doesn't make you feel alone in the world because, and that's really important. I mean, we always want a sense of belonging. And I think lots of times people who are not part of the LGBTQ community or not like a person of color don't understand that the privilege they have is that they don't have to think about it. That's the privilege. I think people are like, well, I'm not privileged. I'm like, it's not necessarily about a money or socioeconomics thing. I think to be able to have characters or television personalities or media personalities who are part of each of these communities, it allows us to normalize it internally and then also just go about our day like, hey, like we're just like everybody else versus feeling outsiders. Because I know when I grew up, I was one of two Asians in my whole school and I never really thought about it. But looking back at it, there's a lot of jokes, a lot of Asian jokes, a lot of gay jokes thrown at me all the time. I hated high school. It was like my least favorite period of my life. I do not wish to return ever. But, you know, in a way, the world's a little bit like a larger version of high school. So that's why it's important for us as adults to really work towards just normalizing everybody. I mean, barring people who are hurting other people. I mean, obviously that's not good to normalize.
No, but you know, the funny thing in media, sometimes your haters can be your fuel in that they actually lead to more clicks. Sometimes they're obsessed with what you do. So that's actually quite good in terms of getting views. So ironically, they can sometimes contribute to your fame, which is an interesting part.
Totally. It's very ironic. I tend to ignore people who are haters or say mean things because I personally don't want to encourage it. I know it's a tactic for some media personalities to do that, to like really call them out or clap back. For me, I just want to foster, like, I'm not a preacher of positivity. I just try to like be an example of someone who just puts up positive things. Listen, I'm not like in my day-to-day just like sunshine and roses. But I think as someone who's in the public eye, I think it's important to only put things out that are additive to the world. And if I want to bitch about something or complain or critique something, I'll do it at home in the privacy of my own home to my friends, to my husband. But I'm not going to put it out into the internet because I think that you're just putting out negativity. The world has enough negativity. The internet has enough negativity. Because like, again, I'm not Pollyannish about the world, but I think that I just want to do my part, whether it's even a little bit.
So we talked about intersectionality. I'm glad we did that because that was something I wanted to bring up. It's often somewhere that gets a little overlooked. But I'd love to now go into the personal reflection section already, because with a career like yours, I'm sure you've had some pretty notable and interesting, unique highs and lows. If you were to look back to date, and obviously not a particularly long career, but it's varied certainly, were there any highs or lows or anywhere you learned lessons perhaps?
Absolutely. I mean, the biggest, most recent lesson that I'm learning now is that just like in any career, I think we always believe that once we scale that next mountain or we scale that next project, we get that next goal, we're going to feel so relieved and so accomplished. And I think that that's like a false promise. And this is my most recent learning experience. And again, that's something I struggle with all the time as well, because I'm brought up in society where you just continue to push, you continue to try to achieve, you know, in a family that's just like very much like go-getters. I think it's important for us to be able to take a step back and look at our accomplishments and recognize that what we have done is enough. What we have done is great and is wonderful, whether they're big or small things, like just achieving goals, little goals, big goals. It's important to really relish in those moments and celebrate them, because otherwise we're constantly just like holding our breath in a metaphorical sense and just waiting for the next big thing. And then, for instance, I just released my cookbook and it's been about 2.5 years of making the actual cookbook, but it's a culmination of my whole life and my whole entire career. And this cookbook means so much to me. And I think when it came out, I was like holding my breath because like, oh my God. And when it finally came out, I didn't necessarily get that sense of just like relief. I was like so happy that it came out and so proud of the project and just so excited for everyone to see it. But I think from a personal standpoint, it wasn't like, okay, I'm done now. I can just take a breath. It's my mind automatically goes to the next project. Like what's the next TV project that we're developing? And it's good to do that. And it's for me, I want to find a balance. It's important to find a balance of being able to pursue the next thing while also celebrating and patting yourself on the back for a job well done for a project like that. So that's sort of something that I've learned because a lot of my lows have really been like, oh my God, right now it's a stagnant time in my career or this idea got turned down. You know, a lot of people don't see how many no's you have to withstand in order to get these really big projects, you know, like a book or a television show. Like people don't realize that in order to get to that place, you have to really endure a lot of rejection and a lot of criticism. Because what the public sees is just like these wonderful projects that you're so happy about and you're so excited about, which I am, but it's also so much work. And also just learning that success is more than just your accomplishments. There's success and failure as well. It's like, are you able to get back up and keep pushing for the next day? That is a form of success that lots of people overlook. So those are some learning lessons that I've picked up over the years. And yeah, I think a lot of the lows have just been like, man, like I just feel there's no movement at all. There's no movement, but it's just about even those times where there's no movements. What are you going to do today that's going to try to move the needle? That's going to push it a little bit forward. It's really just about constantly staying at it. So it's a little bit of a balance of banging your head against the wall and also being like, you know what? I came with a new idea that is considered a success, something like that.
Yes, so. Well, certainly the need to keep moving. I understand that. And one of my previous guests talked about, you know, we never see in life what's left on the cutting room floor. We only see the finished product. But you've laced this with a lot of great words of wisdom already. So usually I move to that part of the podcast, but I think it would be interesting for our listeners, maybe if you can describe that breakthrough into television, just because I'm sure there's a story there, whether the many hundreds who listen and aspire to do the same could ever do it. But what was your particular story of that?
Totally. Yeah. I think it's a little bit of a conundrum, right? Like people are like, how do you break into television? It's so strange. Like people want to do it, but how do you do it? And I was obviously at that place at one point, you know, I started as a model. So I was kind of like in the industry, I guess, but I was a model. So I was just paid to get my picture taken and not speak, not talk, be nice, be professional. That was a thing. But now when I'm on television, I'm Ronnie Wu, the chef, and I'm selling something or teaching people something. And ultimately, I will tell you, I don't know what my breakthrough was, to be honest with you. I think nowadays there's more competition shows, which I think is helpful for a lot of chefs to break through. I think that's where a lot of chefs come from. Like Top Chef, if you're able to get on that show, they hold open casting calls all the time. And it's not always about your skill. It's about what drama can you bring to the television? Or like MasterChef. There's so many cooking competitions and there's so many different ways. Obviously, there's also social media that you can break into. So nowadays, there's just many different ways to break in where I didn't have them when I was starting. Although it's funny, my very first television show was on a cooking competition, I think called The Taste, and I never made it to the final round. And I remember being so excited to do it and then being like, not making the round and actually crying. Like not making the actual series because I was just in the preliminary rounds and I was so emotional thinking that this was the end of my career. And it was a really tough time for me because I had no idea how television worked. But I picked myself back up and I was like, you know what? I'm just going to make YouTube videos. I'm going to practice being on television. Hopefully someone notices me. And then I got called in for a television show to host. And I met with the producers and they immediately loved me. And at 30, I hosted my first television show. And then it kind of went from there. And I think people think that once you have a television show, things kind of just keep coming at you. And they do, but it still takes a lot of work from my end to sort of constantly pursue these things. Because if you don't pursue them, someone else will. And I think ultimately, my only suggestion is just do anything and everything that you can that you think will help you get in front of people. That's really it.
My last question, you said you started drama. What is your particular style of drama? I'll just give you an example because I had a LinkedIn post that was popular because I revealed that I used to be like the last in every race and now I can run marathons and I've run 51. But, you know, it came from a period of real weakness to kind of finding my strength or my edge. And that personal, and sometimes the drama can be conflict. Just my last question is, what kind of drama works for you? What have you found connects?
So I guess the question is more like, what kind of drama propels me, you mean? I mean, I wouldn't say that I would wish for any drama. I think that drama in life is unavoidable. And I think rejection is unavoidable. So I think obviously a lot of the rejection that I've experienced and a lot of the no's and a lot of the mean people that I've encountered in the industry, and I've encountered a lot of amazing, wonderful, generous people, but I've also encountered a lot more mean, snooty people. And I wouldn't say that I wish to constantly meet those people over and over again, but I would say that they definitely pushed me in the sense of like, fine, you don't want to be nice. You don't give me a chance. I will prove you wrong and I'll keep going. Like, I think there's two camps of people, one type of person that will let those people discourage them and really take away their hope and motivation and really crush them. And that's not to say I've not been crushed. I've been crushed, but I don't let it linger. Like, you know, I'm like, oh, that really felt shitty or that really sucked. But then you wake up the next day and you say, you know what, I'm going to prove you wrong. So I would say like that may propel me, but also the people that have been really generous to me, I want to like make them proud. If they're going to give me the time of day and they're also going to like put their neck out in the line for me, I want to make them proud and do my best work. And I never take anyone for granted, because without those people who are believing in you, you wouldn't be anywhere. So it's really about, I think, the two types of drama is like the good drama, which is like remembering the people that help you get where you are and being like, I guess drama can have a negative connotation, but for me, it can be, you can be dramatically just overwhelmingly appreciative. And then you have the negative drama, which are the mean people who have either put you down or set you back or not believed in you. And that can also propel you as well. I just like to think that everybody you encounter can propel you in some shape or form. It's really up to you how you create that perspective on how you can use that interaction to push you forward.
Well, Ronnie, this has been such a great conversation. You said that you didn't find you were going to find your home as a therapist or find your calling as a therapist. But to me, this has almost been like a therapy session. You've laced it with so many words of wisdom, such humility. And I think many people who listen to this will not be either having or have had a particularly fun time at high school. But your trajectory has just been a great evidence of how you can prove them wrong and have a fantastically exciting life, notwithstanding. So thank you so much for coming here and sharing your insights with us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It was really a pleasure chatting with you.
I'm Ethan Devitt. Thank you for listening to our 50 Faces Focus series. If you liked what you heard and would like to tune in to hear from more inspiring professionals and their stories, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be construed as investment advice, and all views are personal and should not be attributed to the organizations and affiliations of the host or any guest.